Uhuru. Uhuru, and welcome to Solidarity Not Charity, the weekly program of the African People's Solidarity Committee. We want to thank, as always, the African People's Socialist Party for their tremendous and profound leadership in waging the struggle for African liberation movement, for the African liberation struggle throughout the world, providing the leadership in the revolutionary period of African liberation, and for creating the organization that we are a part of, the African People's Solidarity Committee, allowing white people to organize and take a stand in principled solidarity with the African Revolution, to organize in our communities, to build a movement for reparations to the African community and for principled and accountable solidarity from the white community in support of the African liberation struggle. Today on our program here on uhururadio.com, the online voice of the International African Revolution, we are going to have a really good discussion. We're presenting a pre-recorded discussion that took place earlier this week with Scott Millender, who is an organizer with the Uhuru Solidarity Movement, who is talking with Janice Kant, the chairwoman of the African People's Solidarity Committee here in St. Petersburg. And they're going to be talking about Earth Day and the work that Uhuru Solidarity Movement is doing to build Earth Day under the theme, "It Will Take Social Change to Fight Climate Change." So this is a really good discussion, and there's a lot of activities that the Uhuru Movement are doing. In fact, yesterday in Philadelphia, Earth Day took place that was organized by the Uhuru Solidarity Movement, and I understand is a really excellent event taking place, the second annual. So I'm going to return to a little music, and then I'm going to bring you that discussion with Scott Millender and Janice Kant. Uhuru.
Uhuru, welcome to Solidarity, Not Charity. I'm Scott Millender with the St. Petersburg Uhuru Solidarity Movement. And with me here is, on another phone, is Janice Kant, and she's the chair of the local chair of the Uhuru, the African People's Solidarity Committee. Uhuru, Janice.
Uhuru, Scott.
And today, we're going to talk about what is happening in St. Petersburg and really across the country on the Uriah campaign, the Africa's Resources in African Hands campaign. So we want to say that this is not a show on how to build green capitalism. In fact, we kind of think of that as an oxymoron. We don't argue for more sustainable imperialism or locally produced neocolonialism. We are here to expose the fact that this economy, this system, is based on the theft of resources from African people, you know, basically for the benefit of white people and white power. We want people to know it's that this system, it's really a parasite that needs to be fed all the time. You know, things like ongoing bank bailouts, the construction of a prison economy, the ongoing attacks on African youth, young people, and really their criminalization. You see that, for example, recently in St. Petersburg. In fact, we had some action with movement in the public schools where kids are actually being arrested in school for just for discipline issues that should be handled in the school, or the recent flash mobs in Philadelphia. You know, there's really a lot of examples. You know, you keep on naming the ways this parasite feeds. So we're here to say, too, that about being green, going green, sustainability, that the only way to fight climate change and the ongoing assault on Mother Earth, as business people call everybody's home, is to embrace social change. We're here to support and build the Africa's Resources in African Hands campaign. And, you know, there's a whole backstory of stolen resources, which, you know, we can get into more. But we also want to support the African Village Survival Initiative, and we're calling on white people like ourselves to truly unite with the struggle of African people to gain control of their resources. So that includes supporting the Uriah campaign and actually helping to outfit a commercial-grade community kitchen here in St. Petersburg. And we will talk about that more. Dennis and I will talk about that more today. And that's going to be a model. That kitchen is going to be a model for building self-reliance and self-determination across North America and indeed the world. So Dennis and I and others have been in St. Petersburg participating in Earth Day events upcoming. And but we don't want to waste time greening up a dying system of exploitation and to celebrate. But instead, we want to celebrate the extraordinary hope offered by the liberation of African people, you know, to unite with the red, black, and green to raise resources as part of the Uriah campaign. So we were at EcoFest in Bradenton, for example, April 10th, and EcoFest in Sarasota, April 17th. And in fact, the Uhuru Solidarity Movement is sponsoring an Earth Day event at the University of South Florida here in St. Pete, along with the student environmental groups. So, Janice, I wanted to sort of turn the discussion to you. And can you tell us more about this event, the Earth Day event at the University of South Florida, and kind of what we hope to achieve with that?
Scott, I'm not hearing you.
Okay.
There you go.
All right. How long have you not been hearing me?
Okay. You were just saying that we're going to be over at the University of South Florida.
Yeah.
And that's what I heard, that on April 22nd, which is Earth Day, University of South Florida is having some events actually all week where they're going to be having organizations and presentations and celebrations. And we wanted to make sure to be there to raise the really critical issues right now that about environment and environmental justice, what is it going to take to change the destruction of the environment is really going to be putting the control of the resources of the earth back in the hands of the African, native, colonized, and oppressed peoples around the world whose resources have been stolen and are used by the majority of you know, North America and U.S. And that's what we're going to be talking about. There's a forum in the evening on Thursday, April 22nd, from 6 to 8 p.m. in the Pointer Corner of the USF Library, which is at 147th Avenue South in St. Petersburg. And that discussion about environmental justice is actually being sponsored by the Nature Club and another environmental student group on campus. And we're really excited to have been invited, where we will have speakers from the Uhuru Movement, including Dr. Aisha Fields, the director of the All African Peoples Development and Empowerment Projects, Camilla Hippolyte, who's also in the African Peoples Development and Empowerment Projects and a USF Environmental Studies graduate student, Penny Hess, author of Overturning the Culture of Violence and the chair of the African Peoples Solidarity Committee nationally, along with Dr. Joseph Dorsey, who's a professor of environmental policy and a representative of the Sustainable Interconnected Business Alliance. So all of these panelists are going to be making presentations and talking about how the environmental destruction is related to this social and economic system of colonialism and imperialism. Well, not all the panelists will be talking about that, but I know that from the Uhuru Movement, that's an understanding that we have, that we're going to really be promoting and showing the effects of this. And, you know, I won't get into what, you know, they will be presenting, and hopefully we can tape those presentations and have them on Uhuru Radio. But that's that day, we're going to also have a booth out on the plaza during the day giving out information about the Africa's Resources in African Hands campaign. We'll be having other information about how people can support this in order to change, stop environmental destruction, what they can do. So I think that's going to be a really important day. And we were also over at the EcoFest in Bradenton last Saturday, and we were at the EcoFest in Sarasota on April 17th. And those are other opportunities for us as Africa's Resources and African Hands campaign to get out and talk to other North Americans about the real causes of and environmental destruction, and really what we can do to support real change for the environment, and talk about what the and maybe Scott, you can say more about this too, about what nations around the world have been addressing and saying about the U.S. and other nations that have created climate change and created the pollution and destruction, and the responsibility that we have to hold those, you know, nations and the U.S. accountable to.
Absolutely. Yeah, Uhuru, Janice. Yeah, it's interesting. It's, a lot of these EcoFest events, you know, they tend to sort of stick to kind of personal things like, you know, greening your own life, you know, doing, you know, community gardens, or, you know, recycling, composting, that kind of thing. But really, the messages and the message that, you know, the Uhuru movement is getting out is that you can't solve those problems. All those things are nice, but they really don't do much to change the basic attack on the earth, because really it's about an attack on people. So, you know, you were saying about what other countries are, you know, calling for, Janice, and, you know, the climate summit in Copenhagen, you know, I guess the COP 77, you know, recently or earlier, I guess this year, you know, they actually, you know, organized and demanded that wealthy nations pay their climate debt. And I think this was a message that really, you know, in terms of reparations, in terms of what, you know, these countries owe that have been stealing resources from, you know, these other countries around the world, the wealthy countries from, you know, Africa and other places, and committing enslavement and genocide and colonialism, you know, they framed it in terms of, look, you know, hey, the climate, this is the result of, you know, the climate is in the situation it's in precisely because the rich countries dumped all their waste carbon dioxide to achieve, you know, their part of their wealth. Not only did they steal their the people's resources from those other countries, but they dump their waste products of, you know, so the wealthy countries dump their waste products into the air and make the air, you know, make the climate, you know, basically destroying the climate for everyone. So they're saying, look, you know, the wealthy nations have to, you know, dig deep and come up with, you know, reparations for this. And I think that, you know, I think that kind of shocked a lot of people. I don't think they realize that, you know, had a consciousness that, hey, this is what's really going on out there. And, you know, our country, you know, kind of, you know, the powers that be, the politicians, they scoffed at that, and they said, no, that's ridiculous. And, you know, there's a lot of reactionary stuff. And, but even, you didn't hear about it. You know, you didn't hear much about it because, you know, people don't want to hear the truth about those things. But I think it's our job, in, the Solidarity Movement to go out and, you know, give this message and say, look, you know, there's in so many ways, the, you know, the white people in these wealthy countries, our own country, but white people here, you know, have a debt, have an historical debt to pay. And if you're honest about that and you really looked at the true situation in your own life and just the world, you know, you got to do something about it. So, you know, we're saying that joining the Uhuru Solidarity Movement and, you know, taking up this cause and really just saying, look, you know, this can't stand. We have to unite with people around the world who want to overturn the situation.
Yes.
That really is the call we're making.
Yes, and I think the other thing, which when we were out doing a lot of this outreach, one thing I think we've really been able to be effective at is to stop the charity mentality. When you talk with people, I think a lot what you hear is, oh, yes, they don't know. You want to teach people around the world about, you know, how better to take resources or that type of thing. But when we expose it, when we say, well, no, the real problem is actually that the resources have been stolen. These Africa's been looted. It's not poor. People really nod. There's nothing. They agree. You can't deny that. And, in fact, when we have the T-shirts from Planet Uhuru, which you can get on uhurusolidarity.org, at Planet Uhuru, they say it. They show all the resources, the gold, the diamond, the bauxite, the coltan, all the different resources that have been stolen from Africa, give it back. And it says Africa's been looted. It's not poor. We have pamphlets. Last time when we were in Bradenton, we sold several of the All Diamonds or Blood Diamonds pamphlet that was written by Penny Hass, who's the chair of the African People's Solidarity Committee. And people want to recognize, they do recognize, and it's so promoted in our culture, I think, the charity mentality. So I think that's been a really important effect of us being out there to challenge that charity politics that says, you know, they just need these help, and to really expose that too, to show how, especially for example in Haiti, the intervention of the IMF or any other, you know, United Nations, all those have been attempts to further exploit, deeper exploitation of the economy, right, and of the people. So I think that's a really important goal and effect that we have being out there in the community.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting because I never, you never know. I you know, since I've been in this movement, I always thought there was something you could look for in people to see. You know, hey, are they going to be responsive to our message or not, or understand and unite with what we're saying? But, well, maybe, Janet, I'll ask you the question because you really have so much experience here. I mean, you know, how is the response? You sort of mentioned that people were responsive to the message. Maybe you could elaborate on that and how, you know, people responded to, you know, our presence out there. And you know, how do you see things going? I mean, do you think people are opening up to this and you know, wanting to take action?
Well, I think what I've seen is a couple of different things. I mean, you see people who are more open with this whole crisis of the imperialist system. People are more open. It's not working for a lot of white people. So people are unemployed. Their houses are being foreclosed. They're seeing what the African community has faced for a long time. And that's an opportunity for us to say, you know, yes, this is painful and this whole system is wrong, but we're not the only ones feeling this. Look, and then it opens people to see, look what African people and other peoples around the world have faced. What people who are under the, you know, military assault of the U.S. are facing in Afghanistan, in Iraq, in, you know, Iran, Cuba, everywhere that the U.S. is either militarily or economically strangling and attacking. So I think that is something we see. And then we also see reaction. I mean, I think that we have an opportunity to challenge that because really peoples around the world, the resistance is so strong and getting so much more out there that you can't deny it. And I think that's this gives people an opportunity to do something. It's not like, you know, peoples around the world just hate the U.S. and you know, for no reason. And I think this gives us an opportunity to take a different side and to stop identifying with the U.S. and what it does and to identify with African, other colonized people around the world, because this is the solution for all people, not just for African people. It's not just Africa's resources in African hands means there's going to be a future for the whole planet, which means there's going to be a future for white people as well. And we have to be on that side, and we have to make that happen at a greater rate or, you know, contribute to that.
Yeah, and so it's like, you know, white people have been on the pedestal for so long that they never understood that, you know, this parasitic economy, you know, has really not served, you know, the African community for the longest time, and I mean for centuries, you know, but they never could understand that. And now that the school is starting to kind of get a little creaky and, you know, maybe a leg or two has fallen off, and it's like, wait a minute, you know, what's going on here? Suddenly, maybe they're open to, you know, a little more discussion and they can realize it. I mean, they still, you know, I think most people want to still maybe want to feel like they can call back on the stool, but what we're saying is, nope, it's not there. It's not going to be there. So you gotta look forward. You gotta look to the future.
Right, and you have to look beyond an individual solution. I think that the Earth Days and the events around Earth Day, we see so much of, you know, recycle, use less energy, which is great. Those are all good things, but it's still all individual. It doesn't take in account like what you're the whole environmental debt, the whole use, and how we're going to change it. So I think that's another thing that us being out there wins is that organization is the power. The only power that African oppressed peoples have, and we have to join organization. We have to join the Uhuru Solidarity Movement, which we're on a membership drive that to gain, I think, 300 members this year, which means people all around the country, anywhere in the world, can join for $25 a year or $10 a year if you're a student. Go online at uhurusolidarity.org and join. You don't have to come to meetings. You don't have to be in an area. Or you can. You can start an organization in your area, bring a speaker, hold fundraisers, do what you do best to be able to bring this information and perspective out to the white world and get on the side, the forward side of history.
Excellent, Uhuru. You know, and you know, the other thing about, you know, joining this movement as opposed to kind of just hanging on and, as you said, Janice, so, you know, pursuing an individual solution in the Going Green movement. I was just reading, because for my day job, I have to pay attention to what happens in the sort of green marketplace. And I just saw a study that said going green, the whole movement, is really mostly just another example of consumerism.
Mm-hmm.
There's actually a market study by and I don't have to mention the group, but it's a credible group. They just did a study of people that care about green, and what they mostly don't care, most people actually don't care about protecting the planet. But what they do care about is making their home more healthy or making it, you know, better for their children or reducing their own personal expenses. So, again, that's not to say that, you know, those things that going green are not good. But what it's saying is that the green movement hasn't really changed anything. You know, people, especially white people, haven't changed their, you know, basic understanding of the world, and more importantly, their basic relationship to the world. They still feel like, you know, hey, it's just about me, and it's not, you know, and not thinking about the future, you know, and the future for everybody's children, not just theirs.
Right. So, well, when there's no material, I mean, the way I have seen that is, you know, there's a material basis for it, that people have the resources they need, they have the benefits, and do not have the incentive because of that. So I think that, you know, that's what the Uhuru movement calls on us. It is actually in our interest, long-term interest, to support the struggles of peoples around the world, to support African people. That a new economic social system for everyone is going to stop this destruction, is going to make a healthier home for everyone. All those things that, you know, people are in it for their own self-interest, but they're able to because they have the resources. So I think that's our work to put Africa's resources back in African hands is going to change that. People won't have that ability to just say, well, I just want to change it, you know, just do these things for myself.
Uh-huh. You mentioned some of the first steps, but what you know, have you seen, you know, out of this, for example, when we were in Bradenton, you know, we had some discussions with, I think there was a yoga instructor, for example, that you spoke with, you know, and you know, so there were specific things that people can do, and I think that's the important thing here is that it's just not about, you know, attending festivals. There's a next step that every person has to take who cares about, you know, really cares about producing this new future.
Yes, and there's so many opportunities. We say, do what you do best. And that's why we were talking with the yoga instructors. We have Yoga for with a Purpose coming up May 2nd through 9th, where yoga studios and classes, instructors, students all around the country are putting on workshops or, you know, benefit workshops for the Africa's Resource and African Hands for the African Village Survival Initiative projects of self-reliance and self-determination that are sustaining, self-sustaining institutions and programs that we can talk more about in a minute. So that's one way that people can participate. They can volunteer with Uhuru Foods in St. Petersburg, in Oakland, California. People can bring speakers to their group or organization. Students can have benefit concerts or whatever people do best. We can hold marathons. There's so many opportunities to be able to raise funds and raise the consciousness and change people's perspectives and be able to get people involved in building a new future.
Yeah, that's a great point, Janice. In fact, maybe we can talk about how the EcoFest the Earth Day event that's happening at the USF came about. Because wasn't that done by a student, in fact, that came in contact with the movement, or was that initiated by that person?
The panel discussion that we're holding?
Yeah, I mean, didn't we reach out to that person and then they did organizing? I'm just raising it as an example of, the kind of thing that students can do in their own school and kind of the initiative that you can take.
Right, that people can have, we did, and somebody who's involved and met the movement and said, yes, I want to bring speakers, I want people to hear this and organized the event, and definitely we can do that in other places. We spoke at New College in Sarasota recently as well because of students asking for the Uhuru movement to speak and present to the other students. There's other ways that people can participate as well, and maybe we can talk more about the Community Commercial Kitchen Project here in St. Petersburg, because there's ways that people can participate by helping raise funds or get equipment donated. That's something people can do from anywhere in the country, actually, is to help get the equipment that's needed for that project. So there's a lot of ways that people can, as we say, do what you do best.
Exactly. Well, I know it's really exciting to the fact that that there's a commitment, the movement has made a commitment to make the community commercial kitchen here in St. Pete, Uhuru House, a reality this summer, really. So, Janice, maybe you can talk more about that specifically, because obviously the focus of your Uhuru campaign is to raise funds for that, and this is an example of the self-sustaining economic development projects that really I think really make the vision of the future concrete. I mean, there's things that we're doing that will actually make a difference that we can support. So can you say more about that?
Definitely. That is exactly it. It's the Community Commercial Kitchen Project is actually a project of the African People's Education and Defense Fund. It's also in conjunction with the African Development Empowerment Projects. They've created the African Village Survival Initiative, which is focusing on food, water, economic development and energy for the African community, for African people, wherever they are in the world. And this kitchen is an economic development project that will actually create community commerce and economic opportunities for the African community, which has been hit tremendously by the economic crisis. I mean, it's been the greatest loss of wealth in the history of this country through the foreclosures and the predatory lending. There's the unemployment is sky high, so there's no opportunities for people to have income or create economy within the community. And that's what the African People's Education Defense Fund has always done, is create economic development and other programs that address the needs of the African community for health, education, economic development. And basically, this kitchen is a commercial kitchen, licensed kitchen, where people can use to make a product, can use to run a catering business or a vending business. It can assist people who have existing businesses, people who want to do cooking classes, There's a lot of different ways that it can actually help in the community, and it's also something that can be that's in conjunction with the African People's Education Defense Fund Wellness Program, because they'll have the opportunity to do cooking and nutrition, healthy cooking classes, nutrition, and other types of wellness classes out of that. So that's sort of in a nutshell. Basically, it's outfitting. The Uhuru House was renovated a couple years back, and the space is there for the kitchen. And what we need to do now is put the infrastructure in with the plumbing and the electrical for and the fire exhaust system for the cooking range, the convection ovens, a 3-compartment sink, dish sanitizer, all the equipment of a commercial kitchen that's needed. We've actually hired the architect and contractors, hiring from within the community, and that is work is starting. What we need now is to raise the balance of the funds for the entire project, which is the construction and the equipment. We've calculated it to be about $47,000, and you can go online at apedf.org. You can see the budget, you can see the equipment needed, you can see where we're at, which is we've raised $17,000 of that $47,000. So we have about a third of the way, and we need your support now. We need everyone's support to finish that fundraising so that we can get this project done by the hopefully by the end of June. And there's actually a full business plan that's on the website as well people can look at. The thing that's exciting about the project is it's self-sustaining. Once the equipment is there, the cost of the rentals for people to rent the kitchen, which it'll be affordable for people in the community to rent. Right now there is no affordable rentals really anywhere. And actually for the African community, I mean, cooking and food service is a traditionally popular activity. I mean, people around the city often are experts at barbecuing, baking, catering, have fish fries, cookouts, and it's an avenue for fundraising for groups, and there's a tremendous potential for that. There's incredible talent and skills, creativity, entrepreneurial spirit, but what's really missing is the facilities and the resources to develop viable businesses. So we've seen that, and we've seen that there isn't any other type of kitchen like this. So it's a really exciting to be able to provide that for the community to build economic development, and that it will actually sustain itself through the rentals and be able to employ someone to be a manager of the kitchen as well.
It's really a remarkable business plan. I know I had a small part in helping with that, and I feel really privileged to have the ability to lend what I could to make that plan what it is. But I think when you look at it, it's truly remarkable because it lays out, I mean, if you look at the mission, things like enabling sustainable economic development and, the seriousness with which the approach is lowering business entry barriers, it isn't just about making profit for a big corporation where the money is going to go off somewhere, and never be seen again by the community. It actually says we're going to, enable, economic development and empower the people there who need it. I mean, it's not just something in the distant future. It's a thing that can happen right now and is real. Not the whole solution, but it's a model, and I think that's the critical thing here, Janice. Offering, I think it's an example in the idea that the fact that it's community-based. And I think that the African community there, and you can speak to this, but that has been kind of a tradition of keeping the community, giving back to the community, and having a do for self, attitude and do for self ethic. Can you speak more to that and how the community kitchen will help that process?
Well, one thing we know for sure is that if a dollar is spent at a locally controlled business, 73 cents of that circulates in that community. And if it's spent with a non-local business, only 43 cents of that stays in the community. So that's one thing we know, that studies have shown that it's really critical to keeping the money within the community. That's real economic development. It's not just putting in an outside business. And
the idea here, too, is that, you know, there's kind of a movement in the U.S. and North America, a local first movement, and, you know, where there's, like, locally owned businesses and that type of thing. And, again, that's okay, but the problem with that is that if the money, you know, if communities that are already rich and already have all the resources kind of stick to themselves and don't, you know, reach out and really see the future here, then, you know, that isn't enough. So I think that what we're saying with this business plan is that, yes, it's a locally, you know, established institution. It will keep dollars circulating in that community. But, you know, it's not only that, but it actually helps bring the resources to where they're, you know, frankly, where they were taken from. So I think that's an important aspect that's a little different from, you know, other local first kind of initiatives. Any thoughts on that, Janice?
Definitely. It is completely different, and it is the model that can be used anywhere in the country or the world. That's part of the programs of the Uhuru Movement and the African People's Education Defense Fund, is that these are models that show people, and in fact, some of the classes will be in business development, marketing, promotion, to help people promote their products or businesses and get that out.
Excellent. And it's interesting, too, that, you know, again, the whole culture here is not a charity culture, that, you know, this is not about, you know, giving money to some, NGO or some nonprofit, where it's going to be like, okay, we're going to have some program that'll, you know, say nice things, maybe help a few people for a period of time, but rather you're building the future here, and, you know, this is something that's controlled by that community, not controlled by, you know, some outside force. So,
right.
I think that's critical too, and maybe you can speak to that as well about, you know, who sort of controls and who really, you know, and how the outreach there with the community happens. Any thoughts on that, Janice?
Well, yes, that is the difference and the key. I mean, the community controlling these type of, having the resources and being able to control them, because you don't see that anywhere. You see, you know, the schools, these culinary schools that charge a fortune for people to be in, to take classes, or the only other kitchens that are available to rent are very expensive and out of the reach of most anyone in the African community. All the opportunities are not here, and that's, you really see that. In fact, the city has made vending laws that are prohibitive, so that even churches and organizations cannot have their own fish fries. It's illegal. You can't have street vending outside of a certain area of downtown. I mean, it's outrageous. It's a strangle on the African community. And I think it's really important when you see that this would provide a licensed, it provides the you know, the legitimacy in the licensed kitchen for people to be able to use to market their own products. It will provide an outlet. There's all kinds of possibilities. You could even have a walk-in store that where people's products would be. It can spawn a lot of other community economic projects. But I think having, you know, for the African community to have those resources in their hands is critical, and that we want to take responsibility, as we were saying, about the resources that have been stolen from the African community, that we can get to our communities. We can talk to the manufacturers of this equipment and have them donate. We can talk to people who are going out of business of restaurants, or people who sell restaurant equipment, and have people donate. This is something we've done many times, and it adds to the for people in our community to be able to feel that they can contribute to this type of project into a real future for all of us. So it's
absolutely. And I think that's a good point, Janice, about, you know, the fact that the city, you know, and other, you know, government has actually had a long history of attack on that community. And this is what, you know, my understanding, since, you know, coming into the movement, I've really been educated about the fact that, you know, this is an ongoing attack, an ongoing process where the ability for people to make a living, to survive, to live, is constantly, you know, closed off, where people used to be able to, you know, then, you know, have small businesses, you know, feed their family or whatever. You know, now they can't. Now they have to, now, you know, laws are prohibit them from doing that. You know, the rents get higher, there's gentrification of the whole area, and so basically people, you know, have to sort of beg for whatever jobs are out there, you know, and they're not many, but, you know, working for some big company that pays you a low wage, whatever, but you have no self-determination, you know, that, you know, it's like you find yourself, that community finds themselves, you know, without any means to have life, and you see that in the 71%, you know, poverty rate, and this is something that I think most white people who live in communities that, you know, where the resources are at, have no conception of what this does and what this is. So, you know, and maybe, Janice, you can, I don't know if you want to elaborate on that, but, well, you know, this is...
Yes, and I think that not just people, it's not just the poverty, but also the social wealth. I think that the African community has about a tenth of the wealth of white communities, and some, I don't have the statistics in front of me, but there's some huge disparities in income and in assets for African people in this country versus white people. And people have no understanding of what that means, of not being able to have any type of fallback, not have any type of capital to start a business or to start any kind of little enterprise. I mean, there's a huge difference in what it means. And so this is part of actually having the resources in the community. I mean, this means that the community would have access to these resources that they don't have. So I think that is a real key, and that what you were saying too about the gentrification, about people having been pushed out of the communities, that's really impacted the local economy. From way back in St. Pete, when the freeways were built, there used to be a thriving business district on 22nd Street South, 16th Street South, and in every instance, the city has moved to build the interstate right through it so that it cut off, put the stadium right there, and then turn the actual front of the stadium to a side that away from the African community, and basically block it off so that people wouldn't come into the African community. And this was after having promised that it was going to bring economic development to the community. People were going to spend money at the restaurants before they went. There was going to be jobs. And what they do is actually quarantine in the African community even more. And so we've seen those areas, the businesses have disappeared. On 22nd Street, I know there was a public housing facility, Jordan Park, that was torn down, rebuilt with about a third of the numbers of units in it, so that less people are even there, and the businesses that served that community have closed. I mean, it's just such impact all over. And when even the attempts of the Uhuru movement to provide economic development projects like the African Festival Market in, I think, 1999 and 2000, the movement started a weekly festival market for vendors to come. It was a business incubator. It was to draw people from all over the city to support the community, much like the Saturday morning market is here. And the city resisted at every level. They wouldn't allow the street to be closed. The original plan was to have it on 16th Street South, which would have been it's obviously that's the way to go, is to close off the street. It brings people to the businesses on that street. It brings people to the vendors. They wouldn't allow that, put it off in a park, you know, didn't support it in a lot of ways. And yet the movement was able to have, I think, 8 businesses that started off of that in that program that went for only about 9 months. So I think it really shows, too, when it's coming from the community, that people have the push to create self-reliance, economic development, and this is another effort to do that. And the African People's Education Defense Fund does that everywhere. As a matter of fact, they're reinstituting the festival right now as a flea market, a monthly flea market at the Uhuru House, as a way for people to create community commerce and do other economic development projects here and around the country.
Absolutely, Uhuru. And really, when you look at, you know, in case anyone has illusions about, you know, other kinds of economic development happening, when you look at what they call, what the city or the state or whoever, you know, calls economic development, you know, in, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, Janice, but, you know, there's a big supermarket, corporate-owned supermarket, you know, put right into the middle of the African community that was called economic development. So, you know, provides maybe a few jobs here or there, but basically it's like, you know, what does it really do? It's just extracting wealth from the community. You know, there's that example, or, you know, or that you mentioned the stadium, which, you know, basically, you know, wiped out, you know, whole neighborhoods. And, you know, now they're talking about, you know, the stadium, it's not adequate, that, oh, now the stadium, they have to, you know, these you know, billion-dollar owners and million-dollar players now have to, you know, get, oh, this is not a good, you know, good stadium. So now taxpayers have to pay more, and we don't want the stadium anymore. So here it is, you've disrupted whole communities, you know, that have been there for generations for, you know, a stadium that you use maybe, what, 15 years, whatever, you know. And then most recently, too, you had money being put into a failing entertainment district in the downtown where they took $750,000. I mean, $750,000 is what? That's what, 15 commercial kitchens, Janice?
Yes.
You know? And they took $750,000 and for this failing district so that a few rich, you know, white people, I guess, you know, and, you know, could basically have their investment, you know, not lose so much money. And the really cruel insult, I think, is that the bank that was holding the mortgage papers, that was controlling the front company that controlled that district, was Wells Fargo. And as you mentioned before, you know, there's the predatory loan scandal from a couple, it's ongoing, people are still losing their homes, that basically, you know, caused African people to lose more wealth than they've lost in slavery. So it's a cruel joke, you know, what's happening. And so what we're saying is that, hey, you know, here's a chance to have something controlled in the community, and that's real. You know, that isn't just basically a thin veil, a cover-up for some group that already has the wealth to increase their wealth, which is what all those examples are. You know, clearly that didn't help most people in that community. Any thoughts there, Janice?
Yes, I really like the way you were describing that. And in fact, they didn't just put the corporation, the supermarket here. They gave $1 million to that corporation as incentive to set up the store.
I mean, what a ripoff! You know, what a ripoff!
And it's the same with the Baywalk. You know, giving $750,000 to this corporation that, you know, has just made trillions profit and has off of the predatory lending that they are being sued for in several states and cities are suing the Wells Fargo and other banks for predatory lending practices that have created that greatest loss of wealth. So it is, as you say, it's just, it's outrageous. And that's why we have to take action, because we have to challenge the cities that are giving this type of money. We have to find out where the money is going and demand that the money be given to, for economic development for the African community. I mean, $30,000 is nothing to in the budget of the cities. They spend so much money on police and containment and on every other aspect. They put all the economic development monies into the downtown area here in St. Petersburg, and not a drop in the African community. And that's what we have to demand, as well as to go out and raise the resources for that, where there is the support, where we do have many friends, supporters. We have people we haven't met that have these have the resources, either equipment or funds, that they want to contribute and want to see real economic development for African people. So that's what our job is, to get out, like we have been at the around this Earth Day and in every other way possible, with the yoga, with a purpose, with any of the other programs, to get out and raise these resources and win others of us and our communities to the real future for all of us.
And I'll tell you again, the business plan that's behind this, this is a serious plan. So, if you know people that are responsible for making decisions in an organization, or have the money themselves, or, it could be anyone, big or small, but, this is a serious plan. And I think it's something that, that the movement we can feel proud of, saying, hey, here's the future that we're proposing, and here's a very serious economic proposal that really is going to address the situation that you won't get addressed by other means. You certainly wouldn't get addressed by any government organization and that type of thing. And we all know what's happening in the economy, and we all know the history of what's happened in these communities. So I think this is a serious, a remarkable, effort, and recommend everyone take a look at it and just get in front of everyone that you can get in front of and say, look, this deserves support. And, people aren't always going to understand it at first, but I think it's our job, like you say, Janice. I know I feel that way personally. It's my job to get this in front of people and say, look, look at all the other charity organizations that you've done. Has it solved anything? So, give this, what they say, the definition of kind of insanity is just doing the same thing over and over again, right? So we're saying, yeah, so that's what, and I think that's what the charity and these economic development, whatever, things that the city has, and that's what it is. It's just doing the same thing over and over again, and it's insane. So we're saying, hey, this is something completely different. I know I haven't seen, a document like this, just in the way this document combines, solid economic understanding and just, simple good business with a political understanding and an understanding of the community, because that's really what is different and what needs to change.
Right. And APEDF, African People's Education Defense Fund, is rooted in the community. It has a track record of other economic development institutions for many years. As a matter of fact, APDF has the Uhuru Furniture and Collectibles in Philadelphia, which has been for 16 years in existence there, and in Oakland for 20 years. Those are long-term successful institutions that are economic development for the African community, and have raised resources for many years. So there's also the fitness gym and wellness program, the All People's Tyron Lewis Community Gym here in St. Petersburg, and the youth basketball programs. There's a long history and track record for the Uhuru House Community Centers as well, being economic development and community centers for really meeting the needs of the people. There's been classes held, tutoring, forums, educational programs.
Right?
I'm sorry?
No, I was going to say language classes, like Spanish language.
Even, yes, yes. And the Uhuru House, that's another economic development institution, the Uhuru House itself, to rent the banquet hall and auditorium and conference room. That's something that's another self-sustaining program, economic institution. People can rent the Uhuru House. If you go on apedf.org, you can have showers for weddings or graduation parties, family reunions, conferences, all kinds of events. Teen dances are held here at the Uhuru House. All kinds of events that can also contribute to economic development and sustainability for the African community.
Uhuru. And, you know, I think the other aspect is that, you know, we don't want to lose focus on, you know, getting the community kitchen, the commercial, the great community kitchen funded. But when you look at all the other things that the Uhuru movement does, you know, that this is really the beginning. It's like a first step. But you got to take that first step. I mean, that's the problem, that, you know, we've already seen what's able to happen. But if you don't take that next step and do it now, then, you know, we're just not going to get to the, you know, the point we know we can get to, you know, and achieve another step in that vision. So, you know, I think that's a really important thing. I mean, another thing I've heard about is locally in St. Pete, and I think it, I mean, my guess is, I'm just saying, from my standpoint, it sounds like something that could be replicated, like the Marcus Garvey Academy, for example. That's something that, you know, another institution where, you know, African kids, African youth, can get an African education.
Uhuru, this comes to the end of this week's broadcast of Uhuru Solidarity, Solidarity Not Charity program. Thank you for listening.
Uhuru.
Uhuru.